Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I like Joe. We can disagree on substance, but let's do it in a civil way. Let us have our public discussions and private discussions in a way that elevates rather than diminishes. Let's move forward and talk about these bills.
It may be kumbaya time for Governor Spitzer and Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno, now that both seem to be climbing down a bit from their spate of accusations against each other. But who knows what they've unleashed with both the state attorney general and the Albany County DA, perhaps investigating both leaders. Meanwhile, the underlying issues remain, including campaign finance reform that Bruno opposes and Spitzer supports. Plus, next Monday is the congestion pricing bill deadline, and today's Times reports that Governor Spitzer is getting ready for a push towards statewide universal health care. We will get three views on the long, hot summer in New York state politics. First, from Senator Bruno's top ally. He's the deputy majority leader of the New York State Senate, Dean Skelos, Republican from Long Island. Senator Skelos, always nice to have you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Did I get that right about Attorney General Cuomo and Albany DA David Soares? Are they actually investigating both Spitzer and Bruno now?
I can't speak to David Soares, but I believe Attorney General Cuomo is looking at records, phone logs, emails in the governor's office to see if, in fact, anything occurred in terms of Senator Bruno being basically followed by the state police at the direction of the governor's office.
Do you think Spitzer broke the law?
I think that's really for the attorney general to determine. But certainly if an elected official, certainly the majority leader, if the state police are being used to follow him, as some have said, that's very Nixon-esque, and hopefully it did not occur. But if it did occur, it's a very serious, I believe, breach of the law.
As for Mr. Bruno, the Times reported yesterday that the Pataki administration first started asking questions about his use of a state police escort. Did you know anything about Pataki's concerns at the time?
Well, first of all, I don't know if that has been confirmed. Everything I've heard or read about is that it's third hand, and certainly Mike Long originally was accused of by the governor's press person, Darren Dopp, of requesting the review. He denied it vigorously. Now they're saying his daughter did it. She's denying it vigorously. And I think that's why it's appropriate that, as Senator Bruno has indicated, that the attorney general come in and try to get to the bottom of this, because it is a serious situation, as I said before, if state police are being used to follow or report on the whereabouts of another elected official.
But also a serious situation if Joe Bruno was using state helicopters to go to political events or do whatever Governor Pataki may have been concerned about with respect to his use of state
police. Well, I think that there is a state ethics ruling that is indicated, and I think this is true of all people who use state resources, that if it's government and partially political, that it is you're not breaking the law. And certainly news reports indicate that both Governor Spitzer used the state helicopter or airplane to speak at a Monroe County Democrat committee fundraiser, and David Patterson has also used it, the lieutenant governor, to meet with, I believe it was Howard Dean down in Washington on political business. But I mean that's something in terms of how these state resources are used can be really defined better in the future. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what Senator Bruno did, and you have a number of businessmen, who, including Mayor Bloomberg, who have come out and said during those periods that Senator Bruno did meet with them on governmental business.
Did conduct state business, not right. Just political activity. Dean Skelos with me, the Senate's deputy majority leader in New York. That means he's the number two in the Republican-controlled Senate to Joe Bruno, who's in this war of words and now criminal investigations with Governor Spitzer. The governor did speak in your district at Jones Beach yesterday, I gather, after which you were quoted as saying, "This is truly kumbaya today." Were you being sarcastic?
Well, maybe I was being a bit cute. I don't know about sarcastic, but I was standing there with Governor Spitzer, who is right now running ads against the senators from Long Island, standing with Harvey Weisenberg, who's a dear friend, Democrat assemblyman, and Tom Suozzi, a Democrat county executive. So, they were heaping praise on me for, passing this legislation to really help the boaters, commercial and recreational, and the people of Point Lookout. So, I mean, I was very happy about that. But I guess it was half unjust that I said, kumbaya.
An underlying issue here is campaign finance reform, part of the governor's agenda to clean up Albany, he says. And apparently you and Mr. Bruno want to keep a loophole to allow big donations from law firms and real estate companies known as LLCs. Do I have that right?
Well, I think what we need here is a level playing field. Now, the governor speaks about all this reform, and meanwhile, he's asking his wealthy friends, lobbyists, business people, to bundle $1 million at a time for his campaign, and offering them access to picnics at his $4 million farmhouse, birthday parties, access to government people that work for him for briefings. So I think,
but if he could do that, if he could do,
right now was talking a good tune, mm-hmm. but he's not doing what he is saying. He's not leading that way. He's asking people to bundle $1 million at a time for him. I've never heard that. That is totally unprecedented.
But you could do that too, right?
And in the meantime, he's asking those of us who have to raise money to compete with that money that he will be using against us to unilaterally surrender.
Why can't anyone do that bundling? In other words, the Republicans could do that bundling too, right?
Well, the difference is that's the governor. Believe me, nobody's going to look to bundle $1 million for Dean Skelos. They can and for access, they can come in and sit down in my office and just talk to me. And so it's really unnecessary for me. But all of us have to have the ability to raise money to compete, especially in the metropolitan area where it is very expensive, the media. And also there's a freedom of speech. People want to contribute to candidates. If you want more accountability, if you want more transparency, I'm all for that. But to unilaterally surrender to the governor when he is bundling $1 million at a time through lobbyists and wealthy friends and offering access, then, I don't believe that's going to happen. And besides that, there are more important issues in the people's minds. Property tax relief on the island. People are struggling with their property taxes. Middle-income families, both parents working, and they're paying $10,000, $11,000, $12,000 in taxes for homes that are on 60 by 100. So,
right.
That's what's affecting people.
Right. Property that's
taxes,
of course, an important
in New
right.
York State, job creation.
But the governor apparently feels that if campaign finance reform isn't dealt with, and this discussion goes on at the national level and everywhere, if you don't deal with getting special interest money limited in campaign finance, then you're never going to get the kinds of policy reforms, be it statewide health insurance or anything else, that the special interests might get their hands on. And if LLCs are real estate firms in part, I don't know if that's going to affect property taxes or not, but that would be the argument on the other side.
Well, but I think you also see that the United States Supreme Court actually came very close to throwing out all campaign finance reform. There are, I believe, 14 states that have unlimited money that people can contribute. We are
is
not
that
in
a
that,
good thing?
That rank. We cannot raise, we're not allowed to raise that kind of money mm-hmm. unlimited. So in New York State, we've had reform. We limit the amount that an individual can give to a candidate such as myself. And the issue is transparency. The issue is accountability. We're all for that. But the main overriding issue with the public, and it's a shame that the governor is trying to blackmail the legislature, is property tax relief, economic development. People upstate are struggling. They need job creation upstate. We want to make sure that our transit system is working correctly, whether it's the subways or the Long Island Railroad that my commuters use. These are the issues that affect people: jobs, future for their children, quality education. The governor is just for some reason hung up on campaign finance reform, and you know, like I've said to some people, I think he's been reading the editorial page of the New York Times too much.
My guest is Deputy Majority Leader.
It's not what the everyday hardworking guy wants.
But one more thing, Senator Scalise, before we move on to some other issues.
Sure.
The governor, I guess, would say, and certainly the Times editorial page did say, that one does not preclude the other. All these other issues that you're talking about are vital, but the governor says campaign finance reform is also vital to cleaning up Albany. Why does it have to be an either or?
I think the issue with the governor is, just like he's looking contributors to bundle money, he's looking to bundle every other issue based on campaign finance reform. And we have indicated, or Senator Bruno has, that the governor wants to add a fifth member to the Board of Elections that he would appoint. Right now there are two Democrats, there are two Republicans to the State Board of Elections, so that it is truly bipartisan. He wants to add a fifth that he would control. So essentially the governor would then control the Board of Elections and the actions of the State Board of Elections. That's wrong. And that's a major, major problem that we have.
Right.
Board of Elections is supposed to bring balance and bipartisanship. And I told him yesterday, I said, Governor, I wouldn't support an appointment of a fifth member of a board if it was a Republican governor that had that appointment.
I guess it's not truly kumbaya just yet. Let's move on to the congestion pricing deadline of next Monday, at least the deadline to apply for federal funds. Mr. Bruno has called the state Senate into session on next Monday. Do you think that your body is prepared to pass a congestion pricing bill that's pretty much what Mayor Bloomberg wants?
Well, I mean, I'm not supportive of it. The Long Island senators, on a bipartisan basis, and I think most suburban senators will not be supportive. It's really I think it depends on what the minority leader Malcolm Smith does. He indicates that he supports it. I guess it's up to him to deliver the votes from the Democrat conference if in fact he can.
You mean if there are enough Democrats in the minority in the Senate who vote yes, then there will be some Republicans who also vote yes?
I imagine there are going to be some Republicans, from upstate that support it. I mean, Senator Bruno is supportive of it. And last time I spoke to him, he indicated he wants to put it out for a vote. And it's, not the first time we put out a bill for a vote, which has been passed with bipartisan support, or has gone down by bipartisan lack of support.
On another topic, the Times is reporting today that the governor is ready to push for universal health care in New York State. Have you been briefed about this?
No, we have not been briefed about it. Yesterday when I saw him, he did not brief me about it. But I think the state has been moving in a positive direction over the years to, and this is before Governor Spitzer became governor, with family health care, child health care plus. We've done some wonderful, wonderful programs to protect people who cannot afford health care insurance. And certainly, again, we want to look at the details, and we want to make sure that as we do it, that the state can afford the cost of it.
Apparently, the Bush administration isn't happy with our Child Health Plus program in New York State. They say it's too generous because kids living in families making as much as $81,000 a year can qualify for this state health insurance. What do you say to Washington?
Well, I think they're wrong, quite frankly. Again, $81,000, and I think you know that when you live in the city, or you live in the suburbs, whether it's Westchester, Nassau, that is not a lot of money when you're either paying rent or making mortgage payments or paying property taxes. That is not a lot of money in terms of being able to afford health insurance.
We'll talk more about the health insurance proposal from the governor and some of these issues in a minute with Democratic Assemblyman Richard Brodsky, Republican Senator Dean Scalise of Long Island, the Deputy Majority Leader of the State Senate. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, his district includes Jones Beach. I think it's a good day for a fact-finding mission, don't you? Assemblyman Brodsky in a minute. Stay with us.
He flared up a couple of times with me on the phone and in person in a very unbecoming way. All I could think about was some little rich kid having a tantrum. I almost expected him to be wandering around stomping his feet.
Bruno on Spitzer a couple of weeks ago now. As we just heard from Dean Skelos, the New York State Senate will meet in an unusual July session on Monday to take up Mayor Bloomberg's congestion pricing proposal. Next week is the deadline to apply for nearly $500 million in federal funds for a congestion pricing experiment, according to the mayor. So no word from the Democratic-controlled Assembly, which seems the more opposed to the bill. One of the leading opponents is Assemblyman Richard Brodsky of Westchester, who joins me now. Assemblyman, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
Nice to be with you again, Brian.
Will the Assembly meet by next Monday to consider a bill?
If there's something to act on. The discussions have been a little bit problematic over the last few weeks, given the relatively poisonous atmosphere that we've had in Albany. And to come up and sit there is not such a good idea. To come up and vote on things, not just congestion pricing, but other things as well, would be a very good thing. But there's no sign quite yet as to what will happen.
Well, the poisonous atmosphere between Bruno and Spitzer doesn't seem to have affected this, because as we just heard from Dean Skelos, the deputy majority leader, Bruno supports the mayor's congestion pricing program, as does the governor. So it's only the Assembly that's the odd body out, no?
On that issue, I think that's true. Poisonous atmospheres, as you know, Brian, don't just pick one victim as the cloud rolls over you. It's a whole, if you will, atmosphere of negotiation that's become very, very difficult. But putting that aside, the reasons the Assembly is not supportive yet, and maybe never will be, of Mayor's plan is that it is simply not a good plan. The mayor's done a great job in raising important issues about in Manhattan and about mass transit funding, but the fundamental proposal he's made is bad for average New Yorkers, would not improve traffic congestion much, and has not been particularly well thought through.
I understand that one of your colleagues, Assemblyman Lantzman of Queens, has introduced an anti-congestion bill that does not include congestion pricing. Are you also involved with that?
I've been involved in talking to Rory on that. I have some other ideas, things like congestion rationing. But in the end, the mayor's done a very good job of dominating the debate. What we did this week is put out a report that clearly and I think fairly explains what the problems are. I think people bought a concept. The legislature doesn't get to enact concepts. We get to enact bills. So I think things that bothered us were things like it is clearly a tax on people making $50,000 or less. People in my community, for example, get away almost unscathed. They don't really have to pay the fee. It's 1,000 cameras on the streets of New York taking pictures of people doing legal things. There are a variety of defects, both, I'd say, ideological and practical. And in the end, all the mayor's plan does is speed traffic up by 0.6 miles an hour. I think this thing can't stand rational scrutiny. And I think the Assembly is going to take that position in discussions with the mayor and the Senate and the governor.
The mayor says one of the reasons for congestion pricing is revenue. He's very open about that, that our entire region needs mass transit capital projects to allow for economic growth in the 21st century economy. And with people continuing to move to our area at such a fast rate, federal funds are down for transit spending. State funds are down for transit spending over a generation ago. So the mayor asks, how else are we going to fund the next generation of transit needs except with this?
Well,
what's your answer
right
to that?
The mayor is absolutely correct. The problem is, again, Brian, because we get to read the bills, not just the press releases, is that the mayor's bill and the Senate bill do not require the revenues to be used for capital improvements on the mass transit system. The press releases say yes, the bill doesn't have that. We pointed that out to the mayor. We pointed out to the mayor that it's not a pilot program. We pointed out to the mayor that there are no real requirements for privacy protections and other things, and the bill doesn't change. But to answer your question quite directly, we have to vote for more taxes, and I'm prepared to do that to fund mass transit revenues. Those include things like gasoline and carbon taxes, payroll taxes, involving commuters. But having identified the problem doesn't mean that the mayor has done a particularly good job of identifying the remedy. That's why we have legislatures. And that's the job we're going to do on this issue.
If your concern or one of your concerns is that it would be a regressive tax, that it would hit lower income people harder to have the congestion pricing, then why say that a gasoline or a carbon tax is a better idea? Wouldn't that also be regressive and then not even really deal with the problem of congestion in Manhattan?
Yes and no. There aren't going to be no perfect solutions, but the taxes that would be otherwise paid would be deductible. A congestion pricing fee would not be. This is particularly regressive because it hits people with incomes below $50,000. Other kinds of taxes are not as bad.
Why do you say that, by the way? Doesn't it hit everybody who drives into Manhattan, and that by and large the people who drive into Manhattan are the wealthier people to begin with? The lowers take mass transit?
That's not the case. One of the reasons is that the mayor proposes to let people deduct from their congestion fee the amount they pay in tolls. So the people of Westchester, New Jersey, Nassau, and Suffolk, who people sort of intuitively think are the targets here, will pay an average of about $2. The people from the Bronx, Queens, and Brooklyn will pay the $8. So that the way the mayor's constructed it is particularly regressive. And I just might add, Brian, that I have an objection to pricing mechanisms generally for distributing public goods. What happens when the parks and the pools and the libraries get crowded? We set up a system where if you can afford it, you get to use those things. This is part of a growing, unexamined trend towards the gentrification of Midtown Manhattan. Now, I don't want to be left just describing the problem and criticizing, because the mayor deserves partners in the remedy. But this particular proposal, as we pointed out in the report, is particularly regressive, particularly insensitive to things like environmental laws. For example, it does not require any environmental or public health studies, things that we usually require when we want to do something of this dramatic nature. Mm-hmm. And it's a fundamental change in the relationship between people and their government. We need to think about it. That's why we have legislation.
Democratic Assemblyman Richard Brodsky of Westchester, my guest on WNYC. Before I ask you about universal health care at the state level, apparently to be proposed by Governor Spitzer, Streets Blog, the website, is reporting yesterday that over the last 5 years, you have accepted at least $16,000 in campaign contributions from parking garage interests, which far exceeds those of any other state legislator. And so they're implying here that the parking lot interests, being very based in Midtown, are opposed to congestion pricing because it would mean less cars, less business, and that you may be carrying some water for them. What do you say?
First of all, let's just assume, Brian, that I'm the worst person in the world. I assume that the reason they're attacking me rather than the report we issued is because the report stands as a fair, thorough, and true, accurate analysis of the plan. The attack on me is silly. I raised over $2 million when I was running for attorney general. We raised it from a lot of people, including a lot of progressives and a lot of left-wingers. The attempt to demonize and attack your opponents on a personal basis is something I reject when it's Karl Rove, and I reject it when it's transportation alternatives and these blogs.
Well, why does the parking lot industry give you more money than any other legislator?
Part of the reason is because I have a long-standing relationship with one family, friends of mine, who have been supporters of mine for years. Brian, I put in bills against congestion pricing in 1995. That's on the public record. If what we're about, assume I'm a crook, if you'd like. But let's then discuss whether the report that I put out has merit or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, I ought to fix it, and I ought to rethink my position. And if it does, even the people calling me names ought to deal with that. I mean, this is silliness. The decision to change the discussion from whether I'm an honest person, from whether the mayor's program is good for the people of the city, is not in anyone's interest. The mayor gives out millions of dollars to the organizations that are supporting his plan. He gives his personal money, tens of millions of dollars. I don't believe those people are supporting his plan because they're dishonest. And I'll tell you right now and real clearly that the decision to raise this now is a sign of intellectual and political bankruptcy.
That's that. What the example that you raised is the politician giving money to the others. Is that
and the others
not
then,
different?
No, it's not different at all if the others then support the politician because they're getting the money. But I don't think they are. I think the mayor's giving of huge sums of money to these groups is part of his civic responsibility. I think the money I've raised for political campaigns. I have a long-cherished, very hardly won reputation for taking on lots of special interests, doing what I think is right, and I'm doing it now. The fact that there are certain folks who choose to change the subject matter to whether I raised money from a family who I'm personally friendly with, that's okay. No one puts a gun to your head and says run for public office, but we're spending a lot of time, Brian, talking about that issue when I would suggest to you that the issues of privacy and air quality and mass transit funding are the things that, frankly, are in the interest of people of state. This is not a lot different, this attack, than the match, if you whatever you want to call that, between Joe Bruno and Elliott.
On the
it is a distraction.
On the I do want to go on to healthcare, but on privacy, to follow up on your privacy concern about the surveillance cameras with congestion pricing, apparently those same kinds of congestion pricing license plate shooting cameras just help foil terrorist attacks in London. Does that
matter to be considered. But one of the things I believe, I vote against the red light cameras. I have a great long-standing opposition to the use of cameras for taking pictures of people doing legal things. If we are going to have such cameras, then let's have a security debate, and maybe that's mm-hmm. the way to go. But we're not having a security debate. We're having a let's pay a fee debate. And with that comes this enormous invasion of privacy. Look, Brian, I could be wrong about this. I even could be wrong about the question of congestion pricing. But we have not had a debate about it. We've had a mayor, in effect, stampeding the political class, as political leaders, I guess, are supposed to do.
I don't have any objection
to that, but I do think that the issues of privacy and air quality and economic fairness are legitimate issues which we need to discuss.
Assemblyman Richard Brodsky, Democrat from Westchester, my guest for another couple of minutes. Then we'll get some analysis of what we've heard from the Democrat and the Republican, from Karen DeWitt, public radio's person in Albany. The Times reports, Assemblyman, that Governor Spitzer is gearing up for a push toward universal health care for New York State at the state level. Have you been briefed on that?
Well, yeah, because frankly, this mirrors a longstanding position of the New York State Assembly that we were unable to get support from the Senate and the previous governor. So I think that what Elliott wants to do is move quickly but judiciously, if you will, towards an expansion of programs that were Assembly creations. We support that. I think it's a good idea. We need to find the money, and we need to make sure that it helps everybody. I heard your discussions with Dean, a question about whether we should go as high as $81,000 in income. The answer is sure we should.
We're there already, aren't we, for Child Health Plus?
On a very limited basis, because the higher the income, the lower the amount of aid that's given and the fewer people that are eligible. So the problem with health care is not just a problem of the very poor. It's a problem for middle-income people.
Well, the very poor presumably are already covered by Medicaid or at least eligible for it.
Yes, I think that's the case. It's now a problem of how far into what I'll call working families you want to get. You know, the problem with health care and health insurance isn't that it isn't there. It's just not there at affordable levels. It is, if you will, Brian, a pricing mechanism of a kind that doesn't work for me in health care, and it doesn't work for me in congestion pricing.
So
we ought not to be making access to these goods available based on ability to pay.
So the model seems to be, if I understand the Times article correctly, to cut Medicaid spending, which is bloated in New York State, in order to help cover more people. But does that mean worse coverage for each individual so more people can have some coverage?
Well, it doesn't mean that from my point of view, because I'm not prepared to accept this description of bloat. One of the reasons Medicaid in New York is so relatively expensive is that we provide long-term nursing care coverage or protections for essentially middle-class people. That you could not like that and say that's not where the government ought to be putting its money, but it is not in and of itself a bloated, wasteful decision.
So, governor is going to take from Medicaid to give to more universal coverage, does that mean, in your opinion, reducing that that home health care benefit?
Yeah, I think it's I think it is a possible outcome, but I don't want to presume that's where the governor is going to go. He may be able to identify things in the existing Medicaid program that we can do without. And clearly, you know, backing, you know, lowering expenditures in certain areas is not a bad thing. But this is a fight for a certain kind of social justice. It says that health care should not be a price-based good. It should be available to people almost as a right. And I kind of buy that. That means that when we get an individual plan from the governor, we're going to have to measure it up against that social justice framework and work
right
with him. Now, if he wants to work with us, we can get something done. The bigger question is, are we in a work together or work against modality up there?
We will see what the governor actually comes up with, and if we can get past he said, and have all three branches of the government working together in Albany anytime soon. Richard Brodsky, Assemblyman from Westchester County, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
So we've heard from a leading Democrat and a leading Republican in the state legislature. Now we turn for some analysis to Public Radio's Albany correspondent, Karen DeWitt. She's the Capitol Bureau Chief for New York State Public Radio. And hi, Karen. How's Albany today?
Hi, Brian. It's fine.
A little cooler.
Exciting.
It's exciting, yes. It's not the long, hot summer that, or it is a longer, hotter summer than people may have expected months ago.
That's right, but in a very different way
than we
expected. It was just what happened last week between Governor Spitzer and Senate Leader Joe Bruno was just really unprecedented. I've covered the Capitol now for longer than I care to admit, about 20 years, and I've never seen anything like it. By the end of the week, I counted at least 7 different investigations had been called for, and it was just really crazy between the accusations about Bruno's use of the state aircraft for fundraising and business trips, and whether Spitzer used the state police to spy on Bruno when they drove him around on his trips. It was crazy.
Right, which Newsday called a Nixonian act, if true, using the state police to spy on Spitzer's political antagonist. And
yes,
it seems like
Spitzer, of course, denies it, we should add.
Right.
Although his spokesman, Darren Dopp, did give 3 different explanations in one day as to what went on, which raised a lot of questions in people's minds around here.
It looks like Spitzer and Bruno may now be ready to climb down from their accusations, mm-hmm, but at least 2 of these investigations that you mentioned seem to have been unleashed, Attorney General Cuomo and Albany DA David Soros. Does this now have a life of its own, even if Spitzer and Bruno kiss and make up?
Well, I think so, because both Attorney General Andrew Cuomo and this district attorney up here, David Soros, have tried to make their names recently on fighting corruption. And they had a lot of press conferences at the beginning of the session that they were really going to go after corruption. And now here's a case where, you know, they're being told maybe there's possible corruption. They're going to have to follow through with it to preserve their own reputations. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of that. And that is, you know, the background for this session that they're trying to pull together, this special legislative session, and it just seems like it's the last.
On the special legislative session, we just heard vociferous arguments against Mayor Bloomberg's congestion pricing plan from Assemblyman Brodsky, mm-hmm, but the mayor keeps pushing this deadline of next Monday to get a bill out of the legislature because he says that's the deadline for getting $400 to $500 million of federal funds. Is it going to happen?
Well, yeah, it's really interesting because it's Spitzer and Bruno who are fighting in this very public way, but it's actually the Assembly Democrats, as you heard most vociferously, as you said, from Richard Brodsky, who have concerns about this congestion pricing, and Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver at this point has not yet said he's going to call his members back on Monday. In the past, he said he doesn't believe that deadline is real. He says he wants to come back sometime this year, but not necessarily this month. So the Assembly Speaker is the one who's kind of dragging his feet on this thing that Spitzer and Bruno on this policy issue are in agreement with. So it's sort of interesting.
Well, I understand why Assemblyman Brodsky would be opposed to this.
Yeah,
he's
certainly
from the suburbs.
Absolutely.
His constituents would have to pay the congestion price. But I don't understand it in Silver's case. And he represents a district inside the congestion pricing zone, Lower Manhattan. Presumably it's in his constituents' interest to get congestion pricing. And the polls show it's popular with those people inside the zone. So what game is Shelley Silver playing with this?
So that's why you have to wonder. I mean, remember 2 years ago with the West Side Stadium that Mayor Bloomberg wanted that?
But that really was against the interest of Silver's district,
well,
because he thought that it would move a lot of offices from Lower Manhattan to Midtown.
Yeah, I know. You're trying to analyze it as, you know, maybe what's good for New York, but I think it maybe has more to do with the power struggle. With Speaker Silver wants to retain a power base, and by going against Mike Bloomberg, he's saying, look, I control the city, too. I have as much say as what goes on here. And, you know, one of the more nefarious theories is he doesn't want to give Bloomberg this great program in case Bloomberg runs for president, because, you know, he might take votes, he probably would take votes away from Hillary Clinton.
Wow, it goes all the way up to that, huh?
Well, I mean, that's sort of what's been thrown around here. I don't know if it's true or not. And certainly some of the concerns that the speaker has raised are, you know, things that would make you think a little bit, all the cameras and the costs to people commuting in. But yeah, it is pretty interesting because Silver is supposed to be an ally of Governor Spitzer, and he's the one who actually slowed down the legislative session in June over this issue by kind of dragging his feet on this whole thing. So it's just an interesting dynamic because Senator Bruno, he's calling his members back Monday, and he's willing to do that, the congestion pricing plan, if he can get the votes from the Democratic senators in his House. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic.
You're right about me, though, Karen. I do have this flaw of trying to analyze the issues in terms of what's good for New York instead of the power struggle, but I'll try to get over that. On the healthcare story in the New York Times today, did that come as a surprise to you that Spitzer is planning a push for a universal healthcare bill for New York?
Well, not totally. I don't know the details of it, but I think that he had talked of that back in his State of the State, that's eventually what he wants to do. At first, he was trying to expand it for children of the working poor a little bit more, but I think that is, you know, one of their ultimate goals, and it seems like, since it's probably not going to happen on a national level anytime soon, it is up to the states to do something like this. So yeah, it doesn't come as a surprise. I don't know the details of it, but it certainly sounds interesting.
And this thing I was discussing with Brodsky, where if the model is to cut some Medicaid expenditures that we have now in order to cover more people with state-subsidized care, would that necessarily mean fewer benefits for each individual, maybe affecting the nursing care at home or whatever benefits may be expensive? Or is there bloat to take out of Medicaid and spread that money around?
Well, the argument's always been that we have the most generous Medicaid program that pays for things that other states don't pay for. I mean, you could argue that people need that care, you know, eye care, various things like that. So that's one of the ways of, you know, making a more basic package for everyone. I mean, I think at some point you're going to have to make some compromises to get everybody covered, and, you know, it's just how they work it out, I guess, and which constituency has the most power, which is usually what happens.
I see another important but wrenching debate on the horizon.
That's right.
Karen DeWitt, Capitol Bureau Chief for New York State Public Radio. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, why New York ranks 48th out of the 50 states in voluntourism. Stay with us.